Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Two teenage girls, 13 and 15, charged with carjacking and murder, were back in a D.C. court today, both charged as juveniles in the death of an Uber Eats driver. Last Friday, a pair of 13-year-olds allegedly committed two carjackings on K Street Northwest. And earlier this month, four people, including two juveniles, arrested and charged with dozens of robberies and carjackings from Virginia to Maryland. What's going on with our young people and crime right now? Why is this happening and what can be done about it? What can we do about it? Well, joining me to talk about this are Jamal Holtz, D.C. Commissioner for the D.C. Commission on Juvenile Justice Reform, and Kyla Woods, co-chair and youth leader, co-chair Youth Leaders in Action Juvenile Justice Advisory Group. If you have a comment, if you have a question, if you have some possible answers, give us a call right now. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at hfisher at WHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. I want to thank both of you, Kyla and Jamal, for joining the conversation.
Thanks for having us.
So, Jamal, let me start with you, the 13 and 15-year-olds back in court today. We may never know what was behind their alleged crime since they are charged as juveniles, those records sealed. But what is your reaction as we continue to dig into this and other crimes allegedly committed just over the past several weeks by people under the age of 17.
Yeah, I mean, while we may not know some of the motives, what we do know is that there's an opportunity gap for young people in our city, right? And it's much bigger than the car being stolen. And my heart's and condolences go out to Muhammad's family. That day, he went out with the intention to work, with the intention to bring back money and bread and butter for his family and provide for his family, and never returned. And what we saw on that day, those two young girls made a huge mistake, a life-changing mistake, a mistake that literally, I believe, cut their life short as far as opportunities. And I think what we have to focus on, and while we continue to grieve and mourn Muhammad's life, we have to also focus on what could have prevented those girls from partaking in those acts. Because like you said, there's been too many carjackings with young people in our city. And while they should be in school, while they should be employed, while they should be having all these opportunities to keep them busy, it's going to take that village to figure out what the preventative care looks like.
Kyla, earlier this month, Montgomery County Police Chief Marcus Jones led the press conference that announced the arrest of four young people, all of them under the age of 21, but one of them 17 and another even younger than that, 15 or so. They are believed to be responsible for a huge crime wave. Carjackings, yes, but also armed robberies. Can you just talk to me from your perspective when you're dealing with young people? The police chief said that, he put it simply, he said they were bored.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that becomes difficult to talk about and difficult to face, in D.C. there's a lot of inequity, right? There's a huge disparity in the lives that young black youth by majority, especially if we're talking about Ward 7 and 8, face as opposed to their white counterparts in Ward 3 and 4. And so I think that when we talk about these conversations and why this is happening, there's a huge, when we just think about the median household income, I mean, for white residents, it's about $143,000 compared to $46,000 earned by the Black family. And so it's not to say that all of these crimes are committed just out of sheer desperate need, but there is a relationship that we're not effectively calling out between poverty and these crimes.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about that, because you, what you just said struck me. Need to carjack? And let me be clear, I'm not excusing robbery where you take money from someone, but that's kind of an easy comparison. You take money because you don't have it.
You have it.
And but carjacking? There's no money in carjacking.
I don't know about that, but I will say that.
Well, if I'm wrong, tell me, please. I'm open to being wrong.
I don't know about the underground world of carjacking in the area, but what I do know is that you don't just start with a more serious crime. These are steps that are taken. And so, especially if we're talking about younger people, right? What is that behavior that we're not noticing and not responding to that leads to the robbery, that leads to the carjacking? And it's definitely, at that point, it isn't about me, you're right. But it's a reality that's been created. And it's not to excuse by any means. I send the most heartfelt condolences to Muhammad's family. And it's not to excuse anyone's actions. But if we're talking on a macro level in terms of what we can do, why are we not correlating these crimes to behaviors that could be noticed earlier on? Because as you stated, these are a lot of young people.
Yes, very young.
Very, very young, and it's scary. And so what comes to mind is what can we do to catch that? But because we don't want this to happen again. We don't want the district is mourning, you know, for the lost lives and opportunity possibly. Of three individuals, you know, and definitely for one.
Jamal, you were going to say something.
I was going to add that the police chief is right. Like, some of these folks are bored. Like, what we're seeing, it's an opportunity, guy. And these aren't just crimes. These are crimes for opportunity, right? It's to get something greater. Is that I'm going to commit this crime because I get a economic advantage at getting something monetary from it. And while that isn't necessarily the route to take, like Kyla said, we have to focus on the steps and the reasons that got us there, right? It's the same. There's literally Black kids in low-income communities that wake up without breakfast and go to sleep without dinner. Is that school is the only place for them to literally survive and literally sometimes the only place for them to get opportunity. And if we aren't looking at ways outside of the school system, and there's even some failures in our school systems where we're failing young people with opportunities. If we aren't looking outside school hours and looking at the model that strong families build strong communities, then we're failing ourselves, right? We're just going to see a continued reputation with these problems, right? Like you don't see affluent neighborhoods and affluent families go out and carjack it and take a car. You don't see affluent families go out and rob someone often to get something economically from it because they have the opportunity right in their face. So what we got to start assessing is what can we put on the table for our young people to literally, during times like this where literally families are dying, people are losing out on wages, and folks are losing out on resources. Like young people are sometimes, I can tell you myself growing up, 16 years old, I had to work. 17 years, all my years of high school, I had to work primarily to help provide for my family. And similar to Chief Conte, I was also in the leadership program called the Marriage Leadership Institute that literally provided wraparound resources for young people economically, but also gave them an opportunity to learn about civic engagement. It kept us busy 24/7, but also it paid us because the understanding that a lot of young Black kids in the city are also providing for their families, right? So while those two young girls committed crimes that I don't think was right, it isn't excusable, but we got to start thinking about what could have prevented those girls from doing those crimes.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about juvenile crimes. What is happening with our young people committing some of the most heinous crimes that our region has seen this year? Carjackings, murders, robberies. What is going on with them? Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Pam, thanks for calling from D.C. What's on your mind?
Yes, 2 days ago you had this same topic, and I was very disappointed to hear the conversation. I guess it was you and your coworker. It was a lady. And y'all was talking about parents. Like parents just send their children out to get in trouble. And the lady that worked with you, she stated that if you send a child, send them to a foster care, but they may kill the foster mother. But foster care is killing children.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Pam. Actually, I was out sick this week and I did not hear the program, so forgive me, but please continue your point.
My daughter got in trouble many years ago. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you the truth. She got in trouble. Today, she has a degree.
Oh, I see.
She has three beautiful children. She's married. Y'all tear down our black family so bad.
So hold on. Let me ask you something, Pam, because I think that was probably Frank Ski's show. That's probably what you were talking about. But with that said, you said your daughter got in trouble.
Yes.
Why did your daughter get in trouble?
You know what? She never went to the school in our community.
Okay.
She went to the school in our community. She met some girls. Okay. I went to that school every day. I tried to get her transfer out to school. I went downtown. I even tried to get services for my daughter. They told me there was nothing they could do for my daughter until she got in trouble. See, that's the difference when you have money and you do, and you know, and you don't have money. When children that has no money get in trouble, then they have to get a record. Those who have money, they wake up these judges late at night and pacify, and then they send them to residential. Yes, my daughter went to a residential service too. We don't get together and have round tables. You know, where you bring all different service areas out. I am just so hurt how y'all tear us down. I had to work, and I had three other children.
Mm-hmm.
I did everything I could to get services for my child.
Okay. Well, let me, Pam, thank you so much for your phone call. And you said your daughter's married now? Is that what you said? I didn't hear. How is she now?
Today?
Yes.
My daughter has an associate degree. She has three beautiful children. She's married.
Okay.
Her older daughter just got accepted to Syracuse with a 4.4.
Okay.
But the thing is, we got to take out these children out the environment.
I see. Pam, thank you so much for your phone call. Kyla, your thoughts about what you just heard from Pam.
Yeah, I mean.
Go ahead, Kyla.
thank you, Jamal. she actually brought up a point that I was going to bring. I mean, why is it that in terms of services, right, opportunities, you either have to be extremely exceptional, a student doing all the right extracurriculars, great at public speaking, all of these things, or you're an at-risk kid. And yes, you get some resources, maybe some opportunities, some mentoring, opportunities for mentorship. But at that point, you're in the system. And you're also less likely to want to engage because you know it's punitive. Why are the responses that we have not proactive? They're reactive. And so as we're talking about the future, how to prevent this, we need to be proactive. It's not waiting until a young person. It should be that the C student who has a passion for nature gets to go on that canoeing trip, gets to have a mentor that's in parks and recreation and can teach them all of these interesting things. And so I really hear Pam. I agree with her that a lot of times, number one, bringing back the disparity in income that we're talking about, if you're working three jobs, if you have other children, and let alone if you happen to, I don't know if she's a single parent or not, but if you happen to be one, I think that there is an opportunity and there is there is room for D.C. to consider ways that we can be proactive in responding to the needs of our young people.
Jamal?
Yeah. Pam, if you're still listening, I feel your frustration. Black families have been torn down for years, especially in Black communities. And what Pam talked about is simply the epitome of what it means that it takes a village to raise a child. And Pam, you gave your daughter that village. Your daughter understood what that village was. I understood as a 23-year-old what that village was, but I also had a hiccup growing up without a father that I never knew the name of. Literally, there are over 2.5 million families, children in this country who have parents behind bars, right, and who don't have stable homes or stable lifestyles. So what that means is that we're always throwing our young people into unstable positions. And we got to start thinking about stability for our young people. We got to start thinking, like we said, like Kyla said, about those mentorships, those programs, to get people engaged in their community. But even greater, we have to use the school system as an opportunity to be a hub for our young people to succeed. We can't just think of school as a place to go and educate, but we got to think about school to go and evolve young people's lives, right? School systems should be talking about civic engagement. School systems should be talking about financial literacy and all those things that matter. But even greater, our education system and our government has to focus on building strong families. And I know that was a part of one of the initiatives that the mayor launched was the Family First Centers.
Well, Jamal, hold your point. I've got to take a quick break, and I'll let you finish your point. Also, Ann from Germantown, Jack from Virginia, we're going to talk to you next. Do not hang up. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The Original Quiet Storm on WHUR is next. This discussion continues on SiriusXM, channel 141 and 96.3 HD2 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM, channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about juvenile crime. Why are we seeing a rise this year in carjackings and robberies and in some cases even murder committed by some of the youngest people in our community? What's behind that? What can be done about it? My guests are Jamal Holtz, D.C. Commissioner for the D.C. Commission on Juvenile Justice Reform, and Kyla Woods, co-chair, Youth Leaders in Action Juvenile Justice Advisory Group. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I know everyone's trying to get through. I promise, keep trying. I will get to your phone calls because I want to hear what you have to say. Go ahead and finish your point, Jamal, please. Jamal,
Go
ahead.
I was just adding a point about the motto of strong families that build strong communities, and the mayor's launching of the and CSSA launching of the Family First Centers in Ward 7 and 8. These are family success centers that are focused on building strong families, that are talking about mental health services, resources, employment services, all the things that create a well-rounded family and a well-equipped family to be able to go out and not have to worry about opportunities to survive. Okay. And that's what we got to start focusing on is what are the opportunities that allow young people to survive, that don't have to be in survival mode, but always thinking about how they can grow and be better.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Jack, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Jack. What's on your mind?
Yes, as a longtime resident of D.C. since the D.C. transit days, I was going to say that the Department of Justice needs to come down harder on these kids for these crimes, but then I thought about that with the present day and the way things are going. I wouldn't trust the Department of Justice to deal fairly with these kids. these things need to be, there needs to be counseling at an early age, starting from kids when they first start going to school, as far as there needs to be behavioral specialists. There needs to be counselors there to spot when kids are going a little to the left. We catch them at an early age before they get to the 13, before they get to 12. I mean, I've rode Metro for a long time, and I've noticed a lot of real violent things happen with the young kids, especially around the times when they are going to school and coming from school, not only against themselves, but against just innocent folks that are doing anything. When I was coming up in the city, we had recreational centers which gave us something to do. And I really think a lot of these kids really need something to do. They have a lot of idle time, and they're worshiping the wrong people for the wrong reasons. There's no real heroes out here that are good guys that they can look up to now. They're looking up to people that have money, rappers, entertainers, and a lot of these people aren't really the best people to look up to. Hmm. But they're only looking at it from a financial statement. What we need, like I said, in early age, from the time kids are small, they're able to talk, communicate, they'll let you know what's going on with them if someone is listening to what they have to say.
Okay.
And teachers in schools today need to pay attention more because bullying is right there in front of them.
Okay. Well, Jack, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I just received a tweet from Zen 1 DC. Zen 1 says, these kids are not committing crimes because of economic disadvantage. While there are many families without food, the kids doing these crimes aren't trying to eat. They want material things and don't want to work for them. Your thoughts about that, Kyla?
That's interesting. One thing I will say is, yes, it's not always for food or to eat, right? But when you're thinking about the response that young people have to poverty, if you haven't eaten all week, there's nothing in your fridge, you don't want to look like it, right? And so you go out and try to overcompensate by being able to purchase the Gucci's, the Louis. And again, this is not to excuse the behavior, but there is a linkage to poverty. And if we continue to ignore it, then the issue won't be resolved. And even when we're thinking about support services that are provided, when a young person, I don't know, gets mad, punches a wall at school, it shouldn't be a suspension. It should be a mental health professional that is able to be on site. That isn't always a school counselor, right? Because we know that they're serving about 100 kids at one time and probably can't give that young person the attention they need. And so I get it. Sometimes it seems like young people just want the flashy things, but they're responding to poverty, whether it's in their household, their community. No young person wants to be the one who looks broke down. And it's not an excuse, but it's a reality.
Okay. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Anne calling from Germantown. Thanks for calling, Anne. What's on your mind?
Good evening.
Hi.
And I agree with the last several callers, actually. I believe that it starts in childhood. You have to get those kids from kindergarten and keep an eye on them. And like the last caller said, the teachers have, too many students at one time to really focus and help. We need to take care of the kids as they're growing up. Of course, it starts in the home. And, there should be the attitude that, college is that's a no-brainer. We have so many opportunities out here, but you have to take advantage of them. So as they grow up, you have to keep an eye on them and work with the parents. And I know some parents, aren't there as they should be. That came to light with, virtual learning, because some of the students did not have internet. They didn't have computers like other children. So it starts from the beginning, and all along the teachers have to work closely with the parents, and it's choices. Those young ladies, they made that choice. I grew up, and I didn't have much money at all. I grew up in the ghetto, but I knew I had dreams,
and encouragement from my home.
Okay.
And not just from my home, myself. It's what you choose to go for.
Okay.
So it has to be that expectation of achieving and not that fast buck. And I had that opportunity too. You know, the dope dealer.
Well, Anne, thank you. Thank you so much for your comments. I do want to go back to something, Jamal, that you said that struck me. You said you had a hiccup because you had a father that you didn't know. That wasn't right. Your hiccup. You didn't chase that because that wasn't your fault. So your father wasn't there, but were you carjacking and robbing folks and, you know, talk. I mean, you know, I'm not being facetious, but mm-hmm. you know, let's not demonize the single parents, mothers or fathers.
Yeah, and I won't, because I sincerely commend and give all love and heart everything to my mother, who raised five kids independently, a single parent mom in the household that literally had to work every day from 6 a.m. to midnight. What I'm saying is that there are life things that I missed out on from not having a male role model in my life, and things that I didn't know until I got a mentor my 11th grade year. So, like, and secondly, if what I would also say is that if there weren't many, if I didn't have that village around me, from my grandmother to my great grandmother to my uncle to the people in the community that uplifted me and pushed me and made sure that I made it in the house before the streetlights came on, who knows what would have turned out with Jamal Holtz. But like what I am grateful for is the strong family that I had to push me. I'm grateful for the strong community I had behind me, and I'm also grateful for the opportunities that were afforded to me from me seeking those things. And truly, not every young black kid in D.C. get those same opportunities to be able to work in high school and be a part of leadership programs like the Mayor's Youth Leadership Institute. While it's there, not every young person know about it. So we have to start meeting young people where they are. And somebody raised a point about teachers. Like, teachers aren't social workers, and teachers aren't going to solve the problem. It truly takes a whole overhaul and top-down approach to ensure young people are getting equitable opportunities at moving forward in life.
I want to talk to both of you about the village, air quotes, before I go back to the phones, because one of the things that came out of the carjacking task force press conference earlier this month was that, you know, you have the thoughts that these young people, these teenagers, you know, are bored. But when you talk about, you know, the fact that carjackings are up, we're ahead of the carjackings at this point in 2021, we're ahead of where we were last year. And last year was higher than the year before, okay? But if the village is shut down, the rec centers are shut down, the Boys and Girls Clubs are shut down, you know, the basketball courts and the, you know, the soccer fields and all of these other places, you know, are shut down. Pam talked about her daughter getting in with the wrong crowd. When you have your peer pressure and you don't have the old G's, the wizened women and the wizened men who are within earshot of chaos and foolishness, that becomes problematic. Do you believe that the pandemic may have even had something to do with where we are right now and not having access to the Jamal Holtzes and the Kyla Woods of the world right now?
If I can jump in first here, like, the village is even struggling, right?
Yeah.
There's even an opportunity gap in the village. And this isn't like a today's thing. This isn't a pandemic thing. This is a generational thing. Like, for decades, for centuries, literally, there's the black communities, particularly east of the river, have been bared the brunt of what opportunity gaps looks like, right? And when you got generations of trauma and generations of people not having and families not having opportunities, we're going to get to that generation where things are literally broken from the top down. Like, our young people aren't getting the opportunities that they deserve. Even the village aren't getting the opportunities that they deserve. Like, literally, there are still families that are waking up every day that don't get to eat breakfast. There are still families who have their kids in schools, but don't have technology for them to get on their lap, to get in school. Like, there are still families that relied on school to feed their kids, but don't have that anymore. So it's like, this is a generational thing, and it's been happening in our communities for years. And we're at a breaking point right now where we're either going to bend or break. And if we're going to bend, we need to do all we can to make sure it doesn't break, right? And that's what this is right now, is we need to reinvest in the right way to where we're invested in our communities that it matters, right? It's no reason why there's 30 cops in one neighborhood in Ward 8 and only one cop in a neighborhood in Ward 3, right? And it's no reason why there's zero school mental health professionals in some schools in Ward 8, but there are some in schools in Ward 2 and 3. So, like, there's a race disparity gap, and there's an economic gap, there's an opportunity gap, and we got to fix that.
Kyla, talk to me about the village.
Yeah. Jamal, I'll push back a little bit. I feel like the village exists, but the players have changed. So when we think about, I don't know how to break into a car. I know that when you think about just how young people even get introduced to crimes, who are these mentors that are maybe the worst mentors you could ever have in the world, but they're still finding space to intervene with young people because there's that gap that you spoke about. And so I think that we need to be clear about the fact that there are older people who are seeking young minds to mold. The crimes that we've heard about, especially in recent weeks, I look at it, I'm like, nope. Someone teaches you how to do that. Someone introduces you to those behaviors. And so I completely agree. We have seen such divestment from communities largely of color, low-income communities. But I think that sometimes we limit ourselves in terms of innovation. So, yes, we aren't able to meet as much in person. But Jamal and I are on multiple boards, right? And how do we meet? Virtually, you know? And so there's ways to connect with young people instead of just throwing up our arms and saying, well.
But hold on, Kyla. I was with you until that last statement. You said Jamal and I are on multiple boards. These kids aren't on boards, Kyla.
Well, that's the thing. It's accessible, though. So if you have a teacher that's saying, hey, there's extra credit if you join this board and tell me what you think. I'm talking about being creative. So mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's just a one step and that everyone's going to be interested in one board. It doesn't have to be a board. It can be, I'm talking about virtual space and being able to connect. And to Jamal's point, there are technology issues. Why aren't we investing in making sure, and I won't say that we aren't completely, because I know DCPS has done a lot of work to make sure that laptops are getting out to young people in the community. But I still hear all the time that young people are having a hard time maintaining their connection with technology in school. And so ramping up these services and just being creative in terms of, I think for a while, we were, as the world was, in the space of, okay, this is going to be over soon. So let's just hunker down, do what we have to do. And innovation is really starting to come into play. And I think that these incidents that we're seeing create a bigger case for why we need to continue to be creative in connecting with young people.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Juan, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Okay, first of all, to go back to the beginning, I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. I'm appalled those two young girls weren't charged as adults. I thought they should have been charged as adults. You committed a crime and caused a man's life, which to me is on a whole different level of crime. So you should have been charged as an adult for that. That's first and foremost. Secondly, people always scream, where the parents at? Where the parents at? The big a problem that still is not being addressed is kids having kids. Not, I work in Southeast. I do deliveries. And it blows my mind to go to someone's door and see at 10 o'clock in the day when a child should be in school, that's without the pandemic, 9-year-old should be in school or whatever the case may be, they're answering the door. I'm like, what is going on here? But the parent in the laying on the sofa asleep or something or screaming, telling them to open the door. That blows my mind. Because I know I was growing up, if I wasn't in school, I knew what was going to happen to me. It's mind-boggling to me. But as I said, these quote-unquote individuals having kids don't know how to be parents in the first place, and then subsequently end up becoming friends to their kids. That's the problem. How can you call yourself raising a child if they're your friend?
Okay. I think you make an interesting point, Juan. Thank you so much. And to follow up on that, I just got another tweet from at Rondell Tucker. And Rondell says, yes, school should be a focal point, but that is just one side of the triangle for our kids. It will take full support from our entire community, schools, business, neighborhoods, professionals, etc. What happens when our kids don't show up in school? Kyla, I'm going to let you respond to that before I go back to the phone lines.
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree. And I think that's what, and I should have said it clear, but that's what I'm talking about with being creative.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many, DC has a wealth of companies, businesses, opportunities to learn more about your local government. I agree. We need to be creative because it can't just happen in the school. Number one, I didn't like school. So I know that there's going to be different things that appeal to young people. And whether that's something that's in the school, outside the school, just finding something that allows, number one, young people to be entertained, engaged, but also to be loved, to know you're loved by your community. It's great to be loved by your family. It's great to have those core members. But when you know you're loved by your community, you're less likely to commit heinous crimes that affect your community. And so I completely agree.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. D, calling from Fort Washington. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I want to thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
But first and foremost, I want to make it clear that I grew up very, very poor. I grew up in D.C. in Parkland. Not one time did I have a desire to go out and carjack someone.
Why not?
So we got to take the responsibility.
But hold on, Dee, let's back up, because that's at the heart of the issue. Why not? Why didn't
Because
you?
I had a parent that was home that let me know I shouldn't be out doing those things. That was there for me, not in the club. She didn't take me somewhere and just leave me during the day where I looked at soap operas all day. She held her place and was a single mother, responsible. She didn't make it so that I had to be in front of a television all day. We're afraid to take the TV from the kids. We're afraid to take technology that can, by the way, can harm our kids if we are not there giving them proper instruction. We refuse to seek instruction ourselves to give it to our kids. Stop blaming poverty and begin to be responsible for your children.
Okay.
Stay home with them. Don't go out and hang out. Do what you're supposed to do. Stop blaming other people for the ills of our children.
Deep.
Let's step up to the plate.
Thank you
Let's
so much.
That's what we're supposed to do.
Thank you so much for your input. So, Jamal, something else, you know, occurred to me when, because the more things change, the more things stay the same. You know, you're a young guy. You know, I'm, you know, considerably older than you. However, you know, one argument that I would make is, you know, when I was, you know, growing up in Prince George's County, just because it was a different time, there were peers of mine who committed crimes. And then there were peers of mine who did not. The thing that just occurred to me, and I'm not suggesting that, you know, we parent by fear, although it worked with me, is that, you know, the reason that I didn't steal anything, the reason that I didn't commit any crimes, because I was terrified of what would happen if I did something like that and I got home. And the fear of what would happen at home was greater than the fear of arrest and dealing with police. But I will say that I did have peers who did do everything from bullying to commit petty crimes, and some of them even bigger crimes. And I will say they did not have that same fear or concern about what would happen when they went home having done these things. Is that part of a foundational workable solution? Is that a parenting 101 thing where you need to put the fear of God in your kids early? Or is that just too old school?
Yeah, I mean, I know some folks have a thing with like old school versus new school. But it's not just about like fear in your child's heart. Like, it's not just about being that mean parent, because even that has sometimes proven not to work, right?
I had mean parents if I committed a crime. Otherwise, they're fine.
Yeah, insane. But partly it's truly structure, right? And it's like, while some families, it's a piece of cake to raise a child and to have a good structure around that child. For others, it's not. Some families just don't have that bonded structure. And I don't mean structure in the sense of being like that mean family. I mean structure in the sense of giving that young person the opportunities that they deserve, putting that young person in the right places, in the right programs. Mm-hmm. And some people aren't exposed to those things. And the more we can, that's why I say strong families build strong communities, because the more we can expose our families to those things that matter and to those things that help build strong young people, the better. And we can see families start to build a structure where young kids and children are surviving.
Yeah. Yeah, let me go back to the phone lines. I've got a lot of calls tonight. Jeff, calling from D.C. Quickly, what's on your mind?
Yes, good evening. I'll try to be as brief as possible. There's been a lot said, a lot that I agree with, a lot that I don't. But with the whole entire thing of being an educator, I've been an educator in D.C., also Prince George's and Montgomery. I would just say a lot of the enabling, I want to just put on the whole Gen Zers as far as, like, you know, the whole generation. But you do see a deterioration that a lot of times people are scared to discipline their children. There's a whole lot of stories from, like, somebody who I was a substitute for who's doing a life sentence to, like, you know, just people who did a complete 180. I think there's a lot of dysfunction in the village, but I can tell, in trying to be as nice as possible, gentrified administration, that, like, you know, some of the kids would act a plumb fool on me, being the black male educator, and because my administrators didn't care too much, they kind of allowed that. But when I talked to them on the street, I was like, you know, you can't begin with all that. I mean, and then from somebody who drives Lyft, I mean, from what I heard with, you know, what unfortunately happened to the Uber driver, that for one of the students to just be like, you know, well, I left my phone in. That's an entitlement thing. That has nothing to do with economics, as somebody was saying earlier. So, I mean, there's a lot of dysfunctional holes of we can do the wraparound services and support. I understand some things because of economics, but especially in D.C., you don't necessarily have to go hungry. There's even stuff for people in the pandemic. So, I mean, I guess it's just putting like a few things of thought of like, yeah, these things work and then these things don't. And then when people are enabling stuff, and, you know, some of what you see now is what you get. Hmm.
Jeff, thank you so much for that. Let me go to Linda calling from Las Vegas. Linda, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, about the kids carjacking and things like that. My opinion is there's someone older behind these young people doing crimes because they know that they get less time for the crime. So a lot of times the older people are offering them money or other things to do things that they wouldn't do themselves.
We don't know that that's a fact.
I'm not saying it's a fact, but it happens. It's not in every case, but in some cases it does.
Uh-oh. Yeah, but Linda, jail isn't going to fix this problem. And that's what we got to start thinking about alternatives.
Yeah. Linda, thank you so much. This has been a mind-expanding, really powerful conversation. We could talk about this for an hour. Unfortunately, I only have a few moments left. And Kyla, I'll let you have the last word. What is a possible solution, particularly as it relates to dealing with the girls?
Yeah, I mean, their case is hard. Number one, I don't know all the facts of...
No, girls in girls in general, oh, not these
in
two.
In general,
yes.
Okay, awesome. That I can speak to more. So when we're talking about... the gentleman was speaking about being a substitute teacher and being reflected in that space and being able to talk to students in a different way. I know that when I've done girls groups, had conversations, there are certain things that there is a certain kind of, I'll use this word, gentrified approach to the way that we deal with real things, right? And so it's not necessarily, I'm not saying the old school heavy-handed approach necessarily, but having a real conversation and building those relationships where you can pull someone to the side, right? Especially an older woman, especially a woman that's been through what you're trying to get into, you know, and can pull you aside and have genuine conversations with you. Because I agree, a lot of things are very whitewashed in the conversations that we have. They're so academic that a young person is going to tune out before you even get your second sentence out. So.
Yes, absolutely. Well said. Jamal Holtz, Kyla Woods, thanks for talking to us. Thanks for the work that you were doing in the streets and on boards and everywhere else. We need your influence and your energy. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 for this Wednesday, March 31st. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.